It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, presented by Exterior Home Solutions, local and trusted since 1999. If you have a need for a garage, roofing, siding, whatever the case may be, you can contact Exterior Home Solutions today at 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. I'm Eric Kane, Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, Grant Ramey. Got a lot of your questions to get into. We'll look around the SEC here towards the end. Big week at VolQuest.com. And right now, if you're listening to us and are not members of VolQuest.com, up until kickoff, 50% off annual memberships by putting the promo code GOVOLS at checkout. GOVOLS at checkout, 50% off annual memberships to VolQuest.com. It's the best deal that we're going to do. Let's jump down into the questions. A lot going on this week outside of just obviously getting ready for Oklahoma. Yuri, the golden one, wants to know if revenue sharing, Brent Hubbs, is a lie. Of course, this coming with the talent fee added on earlier this week to season tickets.
No, it's not a lie. Now, the House settlement with the NCAA is not complete, but the proposed settlement there includes revenue sharing, which would allow you to give up to $22 million to student athletes. And a lot of people proposing that football's capped at $15 million. Now, we got a long ways to go to get to that settlement. But what happened on Tuesday might supersede this settlement when Georgia announced that basically they can pay their – they're putting introducing a law that says they can pay their student athletes and the NCAA can't do anything about it. In other words, you can enter an agreement contract with your student athlete to the university, essentially making them a contract employee, writing them a check, and going about your business. So the point being, revenue share is not a lie. Revenue share is here to stay. And I'm not going to get on a big tangent here, but I've seen a couple different things about, well, I thought the pilot deal took care of this. There's nothing in the pilot agreement that was ever announced that mentioned NIL. That sponsorship and that agreement was about Neyland Stadium for the $400 million worth of renovations they're doing there. So, and the people who said this is a TV deal, TV was never going to write a check directly to the student athlete. The TV money goes into the athletic department budget. Now, lots of people think you can use the TV money to pay the student athletes, but the fact of the matter is, you need a lot of money to make college athletics go because it's professional sports these days, Austin Price.
It is. And I think what he may be referencing is the thread on the board. And it actually may be the same poster. I can't remember the exact poster that posted this. But basically he said, you know, it's not revenue sharing when you're creating a new form of revenue and using the fans to do it. Right. Like, it's not like you're
taxing
sharing
the consumers
money.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so like, I understand. Listen, I get it. I'll be real honest. Most of the people complaining yesterday, I thought on the website, were the ones that always never want to give to the NIL collective. And the ones that give to the NIL collective were unfazed. And they're like, yeah, whatever it takes to win. So, and listen, everybody's got to be good stewards of their own money, whether that's Danny White, whether that's, you know, Spire, or the fans. The fans have to be good stewards of their own personal money. If they don't feel like they can do it, don't do it. Like, it is what it is. Like, you know, I mean, I have my own money. Does that mean I'm giving, you know, money every time somebody asks for, you know, me to buy Girl Scout cookies? Sometimes not, you know? And so, like, I guess you just have to do what you feel is best. But understand, as Hub said, it takes a lot of money to make this whole thing go. And it always has. And it's only gotten worse with the fact that the kids are getting lots of money now. And it's, you know, if you don't like that, then just don't watch. I mean, it is what it is. Like, it's not going back. Kids are going to continue to make money, and like, none of that's going to change. Does, you know, if you beat Alabama in 4 weeks' time, you know, Grant, are you going, well, man, I didn't have as much fun because those guys got paid? Like, I'm pretty sure everybody's going to be plenty happy.
I mean, has it really changed that much? I mean,
no,
because guys are
getting
paid. Like, Tennessee at Oklahoma is a huge game Saturday night, and it's going to be a ton of fun. And it doesn't matter if they're getting a paid, like, NFL guys, or they're not getting a dime. It's still going to be – it's still college football. It's still fun. The game has changed, but I don't think the game on the field has changed. Even with the transfer portal, I mean, it's a lot crazier in the summer.
Yep.
It's a lot crazier the entire offseason. But it's still college football. It's still fun. I mean, it just hasn't changed that much. Like, yes, it's changed, but on the field, it's still college football. It's still so much fun.
Well, the product on the field's better than it's ever been. The entertainment value of it is as good as it's ever been, and if not better. You know, there's chaos behind the scenes, and Tennessee kind of lets you in a little bit on the chaos with their decision to raise ticket prices. They're not the only ones to do that around the country, but this is the world we live in, Eric.
Here's the thing. Here's the deal. Tennessee has had more success the last few years under Josh Heupel and the Danny White administration as they've had in a long, long time. And when that happens, ticket prices are going to go up. Had they just said, hey, ticket prices are going up 10% for 2025, nobody bats an eye. But because they wanted to be honest, they wanted to be transparent, a few people get their panties in the wad. Guess what? If they just raised it, you wouldn't have known anything. You wouldn't have known anything. Like some of these donors that, well, I'm not giving it up. You know. No, let's trust me. A lot of the big names, they do, right? But there are some that don't. But guess what? Now you'll just pay for it another way. So your money's going to go for it regardless. They're just trying to be transparent and honest with the fan base and go, hey, look, it takes money to make this go. This is going to pay for a third of it. We're going to be taking care of the other two thirds. You know, we appreciate you. We hope you still come. You know, and the 15 or 20,000 people that are on the waiting list, you know, if you don't want to come, I'm sure some of them will.
And it's 100 times better to be the first school to do this and to make the headlines because you're doing it and because you're calling it what it is than to be the last school to do this. I mean, read the stuff about Florida. I was reading what Jesse wrote about Florida and Billy Napier's stuff the other day and how they didn't have their ducks in a row when the NIL stuff came to be and they were behind because of that. And look where they are now. Obviously they did right. And they didn't make the right hire apparently with Billy Napier, what we've seen from him, but it's better to be the first school to do this and on the leading edge than the last school to do it and trying to follow suit with everybody else.
So move on now to Volunteer at 87. He's got a couple of questions. The first one's on Idris Farouk. What do you see his role being the remainder of the season? He looks like a player. Was the staff as high on him in August as Volquesters are now?
They liked him a lot. They liked him a lot, Brent. Now his role the rest of the season, I think it depends on, you know, how he keeps coming along and kind of where they are at health wise.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he right now is their fourth safety. Is where I feel. I think he's ahead of John Slaughter right now based on the last two games. Now, you know, you're probably not playing four safeties on Saturday night in Norman. I think you're probably comfortable with three. And we'll see where he develops. I mean, they've always liked his athletic ability. I don't know how good he's been mentally, Eric. I don't know if he's busted stuff. I mean, we see a lot of guys go and just, you know, tackle people and be really aggressive. And everybody goes, man, he's a great player. But is he doing everything right to where you feel comfortable with him in any scenario, in any setting? Probably not. But has he helped himself the last 2 weeks on the football field with his coaching staff and trust? Absolutely. I think he's moving in the right direction.
Yeah, classic example, that's Ricky Gibson of Florida last year. He came in, played 10 or 11 plays, made a couple of tackles or whatever, and we're like, oh, wow, a true freshman saw action on the road in Gainesville. Okay, he's going to be a player. It turns out he had a couple of busts or he was doing the wrong thing, but he was just going full speed. I mean, that's probably what Idris Farouk is doing right now. I'm not saying that he's doing things wrong, but he is helping himself out because he's playing hard. So the more and more reps he gets, obviously, you know, the more comfortable they'll find, you know, in him. And hopefully he'll continue to get those opportunities. Another question here from Volunteer 87. Is there a fast food option the whole VolQuest crew can agree on road trips? AP, you and I usually travel together. We usually stop at Wendy's most of the time.
Well, a lot of that is because, you know, late at night after 11 p.m., not much is open. And we're always killing ourselves trying to get back to, you know, the airport or whatever else after these games. I think most people agree on Chick-fil-A. Yeah. You know? I mean, like, I think that's a standard for me and Hubs or Matt Ray and myself. You know, but I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, just about anything rolls.
Grant, we had a fun time at.
Grant doesn't eat. Grant just drives. He doesn't eat.
That's a lie. Wendy's, first of all, I have a lot of hot takes about Wendy's that people don't. Wendy's is terribly underrated. The chili, fantastic. People hate on the chili. It's the best. Chili and a frosty, fire and ice. Man, nothing like it.
We had a fun time at the Whataburger outside of Birmingham last year for like an hour and a half at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Not as much fun as AP and I had at the Whataburger in Arkansas COVID year at like 2:30 in the morning.
We walked into that Whataburger across from the where they used to have SEC Media Days, that huge hotel in Hoover. I think we walked in right behind a busload of Tennessee fans that had walked in and ordered right in front of us. So the timing was incredible.
Yeah. The A-Dog wants to know, given the financial issues associated with the House settlement, do you anticipate Tennessee avoiding bye games like Kent State in the future to reduce costs?
I don't know that it's to reduce costs, but I think you want. I think you're going to see less and less of those games as you move forward in college football, because if you're going to charge more and more for the fan base to come to games, you can't give them the appetizer of Chattanooga and Kent State as your first two home games and play four of those. I think at some point, Grant, this league has to go to an additional conference game, but they're not going to go there until TV ponies up more money. But I think as you figure out the landscape of the 12-team playoff, does 8-4 still get you in as a playoff team? You know, if you're playing a hard schedule, or are we still stuck in the older days where you got to be 11-1, 10-2 to get in? If that's the case, then you're going to continue with some of these games. If 8-4 teams who play really good schedules are getting in, then for the consumer, you're going to play more of those types of games and less of these bye games.
I think you have to walk a line between you don't want a ton of, you don't want a Kent State and Chattanooga back to back, but you also don't want a insane schedule where you're playing some crazy, Power Four conference team. It's going to be a tough game. You also kind of want that preseason kind of feel to it, because there's going to be Alabama, Georgia, Florida, whoever coming down the line later in the season. And yeah, I agree. It's going to be a waiting game on that SEC in the ninth game. But I think you have to kind of walk the line between you want your team to, these chances to prepare on the field like a Chattanooga and a Kent State and play these guys and play empty your bench in the second half, stuff like that. But you also, if you're going to ask for people to pay more money for these games, they better be better games.
I do think it also, if you scrap the 4 years of eligibility and make it five, which has been proposed, I do think it makes it easier to play a tougher schedule, because you don't have to worry about, we need those, kind of layup games to bring along some freshmen that we want to play in the four games and not, burn a red shirt. Like if you're just getting 5 years of eligibility, you just roll right on through. So I wouldn't mind to see it if the model was more like the NFL from a standpoint of you didn't have to be perfect. And I know you don't have to be perfect in the 12-team playoff. Let's face it, 10-2 gets you in more than likely, right? But I mean, I wouldn't mind to see it if you had it in a situation where it was more difficult and 9-3 or 8-4 got you in versus, having to be so perfect. Because I mean, how many times have you seen in the NFL, Major League Baseball, where a wild card team goes and wins the World Series or goes and wins the Super Bowl? It's happened, right?
There's just so many colleges compared to those leagues, right?
I know.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not teams that can really compete though.
But if super conferences are coming, two super conferences, then you got the AFC and the NFC, essentially, and you play that a little different. Now that's further on down the line, but I do think scheduling for ADs is going to be an interesting thought process over the course of the next 4 or 5 years as they adjust to 12-team playoff that might become a 16-team playoff before it's all said and done. As you continue to try to raise more and more money as the cost of doing business goes higher and higher.
Doolittle Vol, three games in, what has surprised you the most about this team? Can be good or bad. Grant, I don't think there's a whole lot of bad to date about this team. What surprised you good so far?
Defensive tackles. Everybody talked all summer about Tennessee's defensive front, how good they were, how deep they were.
But it's all about the edge. I couldn't agree more. I think the interior has been so good.
James Pierce was a name you heard a ton. It was going to be James Pierce. He's going to be the number one overall pick or top five or whatever in the NFL draft in April and all this stuff. But the way they've attacked the interior of opposing offensive lines, what they did against North Carolina State, I don't know how good NC State is. They're top 25 like everybody thought they were entering the season. But the way Tennessee dominated that game on the defensive front, on the interior, I mean, they've been great, and they've rolled in like hockey shifts with those guys, and James Pierce really hadn't done a ton yet. Like, he's going to get his at some point, and it's going to be crazy to think that, they can do that on top of what they've already shown. So it's Bryson Easton, it's Omar Norman Lott, it's Omari Thomas, it's all those guys. Like, you just keep going down the list. Like, the interior defensive line has been incredible.
I did an Oklahoma podcast on Wednesday, and I told, those guys, Tennessee's defensive line is like you're being out in the ocean and you're trying to get back to shore, and the undertow keeps dragging you out as the waves crash down upon you. Like, you just, you can't, you can't catch up. Like, you can't make up any ground because, you know, the wave of defensive linemen continues to come and continues to come. And the third string guys are just as good as the first string guys. And it's really, really hard. I think the biggest surprise for me is that Tennessee's not allowed a touchdown. I mean, how many times mm-hmm. have we watched a team, even if you were pretty good on defense, you know, somebody pops a big play, somebody, you know, busts somebody, you know, they just naturally dink and dunk it down the field and they hit a, you know, 20-yard touchdown run.
You've also been emptying the bench in some of these games, literally. Yeah, I mean, like
two of the three, Eric, you've played, you know, I mean, really that everybody's played in all three games, but two of the three, you didn't play a starter past halftime. Heck, last week they were out, you know, fairly early in the, or you know, deep late in the second quarter. I mean, I'm surprised that, like, they've never had any of those moments. Like, they've been a hungry defense regardless of who's out there.
I'm going to go with tight ends. I thought the tight ends would be pretty good. I thought they would be better in that room. I didn't think they would be this effective and this have this significant of a role through three games with what they're asking those tight ends to do. I think that changes the diversity of this offense and gives a defensive coordinator a whole heck of a lot more to have to deal with when you can go with all the different personnel groupings because of what you have to tight end spot.
All three of those answers are really good ones to be different. I'll go because I could have said all three of those as well. I'll go to Sean Bishop. The level of play that he's inserted in this lineup, he's been solid. I mean, really, he's been better than expected, at least for me to this point. So, I mean, Tennessee's run game, that's expected. Dylan Sampson, that's expected. Seeing what Deshaun Bishop's done so far, it's a pleasant surprise for me. Let's go to RD Vol. I fully expect Brent Venables to be aggressive. I have a scheme dialed up to try and confuse our offensive lineman and Nico. How confident are you in this offensive line to go into Norman and win the line of scrimmage? I think everybody knows, Brent, that, you know, everybody expects Tennessee's defensive line to win that battle with OU's offensive line. What about flipping it OUD line, Tennessee O line?
Well, I mean, I think they've got to be better than they were against NC State, particularly on the right side. I thought they got Nico hit too much. I think Tennessee's got to avoid third and long. The ground game's got to be your friend. You can't let them pin their ears back and try to confuse Nico with coverages on the back end or bring pressure in third and long situations where he has to hold on to the ball more. I think Tennessee will tighten up and be better. And I think Nico's legs will be better and be a factor as well. So I think Tennessee will be okay there, but I do think that's an area where they have to be better than they were against NC State.
We'll go to Vulcan. What position groups, not individuals, but position groups, would you say is the first quarter of the season MVP on defense and then on offense? Please consider defensive tackles, DNs, Leos as separate positions in the evaluation. Thanks in advance. I'll go to, you guys just mentioned a moment ago, offensively, I'll go tight ends. Well, I guess early season MVP, I guess running backs for offense. And then I would go defensive tackles for the defense. Anybody disagree?
Nope. Dylan Sampson's been too good to, I mean, Miles Kitzelman, all those guys, Holden Stace, Ethan Davis, they've been impressive. But Dylan Sampson, what he does consistently and makes it look pretty routine. I mean, Oklahoma's going to be the toughest run defense they face so far, but what they've done through three games in the run game is pretty incredible.
See, I was about to say tight ends, then I was like, I can't say. I mean, and tight ends are a big part of what Dylan Sampson's right. done, but I would have to say running back Dylan Sampson, or running back. One more before the break here. Athrun, how much pressure does Tim Banks bring to try and prevent Arnold from scrambling around? AP, it feels like Tim Banks is always a pretty aggressive play caller.
He is. I would expect him to come from different levels. And I'd expect him to, you know, Hubs talked earlier in the week about, you know, them stunning more on the defensive line. I think that they will try to mask and disguise some stuff to throw some, you know, some wrinkles at what is a very young and inexperienced quarterback, just like Oklahoma should do to Nico, right? I mean, like, you're going to try to, you know, see where the young quarterbacks are in this game with some disguise. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think he's just going to sit back and think, well, we'll just get home with, you know, James and Josephs and our interior defensive line. He's going to occasionally bring something. Although I do think predominantly he's going to lean on Tennessee's ability to get home with their base. He's going to sprinkle it in when Jackson Arnold feels comfortable and then, boom, hit him with it.
How does the secondary fare if Oklahoma gets Nick Anderson back this week? Nick Anderson, 10 touchdowns a season ago, has not played so far this year.
Grant, we'll see. I mean, the reality is the secondary hasn't been tested for a couple of reasons. One, those defensive linemen. And two, they haven't played anybody that's a vertical guy. I mean, everybody at North Carolina State thought Noah Rogers would be a vertical threat. It just hasn't materialized over there for him. I mean, how many balls have been attempted vertically down the field against Tennessee in three games?
I don't know the answer, but I agree with what you're saying, that the defensive line is going to be the direct correlation with what the defensive backfield looks like. Because if Jackson Arnold's sitting back there in a clean pocket and he's got all day, that defensive backfield is probably going to get exposed because they're so young and still so inexperienced, and so much turnover from last year. But, I mean, what we've seen from the defensive front doesn't make anybody think that it's just going to be a clean pocket and the kid's not going to be under pressure and not going to have all day to sit back there and pick you apart.
So outside of the pass completion to Concepcion against NC State, I think that went for maybe 25 yards or so.
It was trick play. Yeah.
Yeah. The longest pass completion against Tennessee so far this season in games, Kent State, 9 yards. The one outside of that trick play against NC State, 19 yards. UTC, 22 yards. I mean, again, Tennessee's defense is you know, not been tested vertically an awful lot so far this season. Has Bishop jumped Seldon and become running back two?
In my mind, he has. Now, we'll see how, you know, once, you know, Seldon is cleared to go, you know, providing he is cleared this week, we'll see how, you know, that, you know, materializes. But in my mind, yes, he has proven enough to be Tennessee's second running back off the bench.
We got many, many more of your questions to get into, but first, let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on, we got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
865-524-5888, online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. There you go. Yeah, it's a rooftop party over here.
I'm ready for my rooftop party.
Hubs, you ready?
Always ready, man. Let's have a party.
What I remember about Oklahoma 2014 is we were basically on the roof of that press box. And we
hey, It's supposedly been redone, Grant. Supposedly it's been redone.
But we're still up in the sky.
Well, you're always going to be that way.
Unless you play at an NFL stadium. NFL stadiums, you're lower. I love that. Let's go to ATX Fall 19. I hope this isn't the case, but does the targeting penalty on Jacoby Thomas hurt his stock playing time with the coaches? Really like his athleticism pursuit. Number one, Brent, I know it doesn't hurt him. Two, on the call in general, that was the 100% the right call. He ducked his head. It's a teachable moment. I mean, the hit was great. The targeting wasn't because of how, you know, the impact of the hit. It was because he went in there with his head ducked, and obviously that's a part of targeting in this day and age.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's going to go, well, we can't play him. He might target somebody. I mean,
yeah,
no, he's going to play, and I think he's playing more and more because I think the game is slowing down for him, and he's getting more and more comfortable.
Also, if you target in the first half against Kent State, that's like a tree falling in the forest. Does it really make a noise because you weren't playing in the second half anyway? Did you really get suspended for that? Did you really?
It's a great point.
Mazur Rackham, outside of Peely, none of the current players were alive when Heupel played at Oklahoma, and it's unlikely they even remember him coaching there. With that being said, what effect do you think on the national media storylines about Heupel going home or lingering bad blood have on the players? What is Heupel telling them about his time there and the media's coverage? Does this history provide the team any additional motivation?
Heupel is not talking to his team about the media coverage or his time there. Like, this guy's zoned in on Oklahoma, the opponent, and I'm sure he'll be glad to wave to the crowd when they put the little video montage up there on Saturday. But outside of that, he is uh, he's focused. And I mean, I just don't think he makes it any kind of thing with his team. Does his team know that he played there? Do they know that it ended poorly? I mean, I'm sure they probably read enough, you know, on social media to know how big of a game this is. But Josh Heupel hadn't talked about it to him.
The kids are online. They see everything and they hear everything, probably to a fault. So I'm sure they're well aware of everything that surrounds this game. But I 100% agree with AP that Josh isn't going to make it anything out of the ordinary or different than any other week playing football.
Yeah, I don't think he's pulling the dad scene from the old original Red Dawn when he was behind the chain link fence going, "Avenge me, boys." You know what I mean? I don't think it's that kind of scene. Eric Kane wasn't alive when that movie came out either. But anyway. Anyway, I don't think Josh Heupel's making it anything about himself at all.
They need to do the Texas Rick Barnes treatment in whatever year that was, 2021. The team bus shows up and they got this huge banner that says "Unite the Family, Unite the Longhorn Family," and it's got Barnes from his coaching days there. And then they go in the arena and all the staffers are wearing "Unite the Family" shirts with a picture of Barnes on the back. It was wild.
Kate Measles wants to know, what are some of the names that we're after? Any takes in this recruiting class, if any? I would assume, Austin, he's referencing 25 to finish off this class. 25?
You know, again, they've talked to Amari Adams, is committed to Clemson. I think a few of those Clemson kids have called Tennessee, but I'm not sure they'll, until any of them take visits, it's hard for me to view any of it as real. I think it's kind of like that, you know, that it's that, you know, man or woman who gets married as an 18-year-old and then, you know, all of a sudden they find themselves flirting, you know, like because they got married too young, like, you know, they didn't ever have the opportunity to flirt. I mean, is that too cringeworthy for you?
I just wasn't sure where you're going, but go ahead. You're okay.
I'm saying, like, you get married too early. I'm not saying they do anything. I'm just saying they're flirting.
On this episode of Cheaters.
They're flirty. Like, I think that when you don't ever – get to go take visits, the most you can get are the phone calls. So, like, they just want to feel love from somebody else on a phone call. And so they, you know, they talk to schools, and I think Tennessee's talked to a few of those kids. Again, until they make it here, I don't think it matters. I don't think any of it's real. You know, Tennessee's, you know, looked at, you know, the Mbakwe kid who's committed to Florida. He's supposed to be here, you know, in October for a visit. But he's going to take, like, 8 or 9 visits, you know. I don't know. I just, until any of them make it here, it doesn't become real for me, you know, because I just don't think that, you know, a kid's going to flip without taking a visit to a school, seeing it firsthand, feeling the juice and the vibe and all that stuff and go from there. So, you know, there's a few that they reached out to or kids have reached out to them. But until those kids make it here, I think it's a moot point.
What you're saying is these kids have a Thelma Lou, but they've also got a Juanita down at the diner.
That's exactly right.
You guys made me feel bad. I'm not trying to make it like a thing.
I think for Tennessee right now with this class, isn't it more just about holding on to what you have? Because everybody's going after your guys.
Correct. I mean, you know, whether it be Travis Smith or Douglas Utu, who USC and Oregon have tried to be working. And let's face it, those two teams are undefeated and ranked high and, you know, they're West Coast schools. So, you know, I mean, I think, you know, for Tennessee, you just want to hold on to what you got. Yeah, I agree with that. Like, if you don't sign another kid or you get a commitment from another kid from here to the house, I think you like what you've done in this class and you just want to hold on to what you have.
Juanita Barn.
We're going to move on now. Swagger 12, Tennessee head coach basketball.
I don't know who Juanita is.
Go ahead, Eric.
I don't watch the show, and I never will.
I do love, though. I do love that it used to just me be busting Eric's chops about Kirby Puckett, and now it's on to Hubs. Hubs is, like, making Red Dawn references going.
But that movie, what I mean, I wasn't making fun of Eric. That movie came out in 84. It was the first '85. It was the first PG-13 movie.
Then that means Grant wasn't born either. And I was
probably
two. I was one.
There you go.
You know what I think of when you say Red Dawn? I think of the video game Red Dead Redemption, and that was a fun video game. It's like Grand Theft Auto on a horse.
Two different eras.
What's going on here?
Swagger 12. Tennessee had both basketball and baseball recruits in town last week. What do those recruits do at games compared to football recruits? Vol-wog, go on the field, et cetera. Grant, I mean, those guys are definitely on the field pregame. They got good seats. What else do the basketball recruits do?
Yeah, they're on the field pregame, and they're there for parts of the game early on. Depends on kind of what kind of game it is. Kent State, they're there for the start of the game, and then they leave and go back to Pratt. They're not hanging out there for a 71-0 when nobody's there in the fourth quarter, second half kind of thing. It's more so go back to Pratt and have meetings and go to steak dinners and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, the football atmosphere, I mean, Rick has talked about it a lot. Like, it's so much easier to recruit at a football school that has that kind of atmosphere that you can sell versus a school that doesn't have a football program where you don't have those football weekends to sell to recruits. And there's a reason they schedule these things for, you know, an Alabama weekend or a Florida weekend or whatever.
They also play pickup where they get to try out to be on the team, right, Grant?
They do. They get to play and that's another thing for Rick. They do workouts at Pratt where they just team up and go against the guys on roster. Then Rick and the staff get the feedback from the guys on roster, basically who you want, who you don't want.
It's the craziest thing ever of all the different official visit rules. But it's okay in basketball to bring your sneakers and let's play a little church league 5-on-5. And we'll decide if we like you or not. It's crazy.
The Mookie Monster has some hypotheticals, but stay with me here. They're fun future headlines. Okay, with all the talk about football right now, let's think ahead to basketball and baseball, shall we? Grant, fill in the blank here. Okay, so Tennessee basketball is your back-to-back SEC regular season champions. The Vols secured their second straight conference championship because blank.
Because they replaced the production of Dalton Connect, and that's semantics, not saying that Chaz Lanier replaces Dalton Connect or Igor Milicic or Darlin Stone Dubar, but the combined guys that they brought in the portal can replace that 21.7 or whatever it was points per game that Dalton averaged last year. And obviously you got to replace Josiah, and you got to replace Santi, you got to replace Jonas Adu and Toby Awaka, the list goes on. But Dalton, first and foremost, because he changed the offense and the scoring and what you thought about a Rick Barnes basketball team. Can you replace that scoring night in, night out, consistently be that kind of offensive basketball team based on who you brought in? Chaz Lanier is a great start. I think Igor Milicic, they're really excited about him. They think that Felix Okpara can replace the Jonas Adu production, albeit in a different way, playing above the rim and catching lobs and stuff like that. So if they replace the production of Dalton Connect, they can repeat as SEC champions.
Tennessee baseball is headed back to the College World Series. The Vols are headed back to Omaha for the fourth trip in 5 years because the pitching is once again a top 10 unit in college baseball. Tennessee was third nationally heading to the College World Series in the ERA a season ago. The emergence, obviously, of Xander and, you know, what all those guys did. You know, very unorthodox as well. I don't think Frank Anderson ever wants to have an opener on Friday night again, but there's always been a constant, you know, with the Atlanta Braves and all those divisional titles. It was pitching, pitching, pitching. You know, Tennessee's built on pitching as well. So as long as Tennessee's top 10, you know, nationally in pitching, I think they got enough offense to make that happen. And I expect top 10 because that's been the norm for Tennessee here with Tony and Frank Anderson. A couple more here, then we'll look around the SEC. Big Easy Vol says over under 65 rushing yards for Nico this week. He's not had to use his legs a ton so far, but do you see that changing on Saturday?
I would go under.
I would too.
But he's still choosing 40. To run him in spots.
I can see him getting 40.
That, yeah, the spots is what it is for me. It's not the total. It's the can he extend third and six by getting seven like he did early against NC State, like we saw Hendon Hooker do so many times. It's not the total. It's when does he get those yards, and do they extend drives? How big are they? Stuff like that.
Wiseval wants to know, Wiseval 24, over under 7 carries for Nico in this football game. Kind of what we were saying right there. Over under 7.
Over.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over because I think you throw scrambles into that factor as well.
Yeah. Over under 250 yards passing.
I'll go under, but that's a pretty good number. You know, Eric knows how much I like to take the under.
Yeah. Surprised you said that.
I think because the run game has been so impressive, and I think they got to lean on it here. They got to continue. They can't abandon the run game and just put it all on Nico. You're going to have to produce there. And I think if they produce at their pretty standard rate, you don't have to throw it for 250 plus to win this football game.
Over under 1.5 sacks for James Pierce. I'm going to say over, and this is why. James Pierce is due, and when James Pierce gets sacks, he gets them in bunches. So give me James Pierce over the 1.5 in this one. Brandon SV, Jermall McCoy is our best cornerback since good Kamal Haddon?
I would say Cam Sutton.
Okay. True or false, 2024 Ricky Gibson would be the best cornerback on the 23 Vols roster. He was on the 23 Vols roster, so I guess that has to be false, right? Because he had a chance to be the best cornerback?
Well, this version of Ricky Gibson, sure. A stronger, you know, but I mean, I would not take Ricky Gibson right now over where Kamal Haddon was playing before the shoulder injury. After the Kamal Haddon shoulder injury, this version of Ricky Gibson would be the best corner on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, it changes every year. I mean, the 2024 version of Matt Rhea versus the 2021 version of Matt Rhea, two totally different things.
Maybe. Depends on what day it is for Matt.
The 2024 Brent Hubbs versus the 1915 Wakefield Brent Hubbs.
All the difference is I didn't have white hair. Well, you don't know. It was black and white. We're not real sure what my hair looked like back then.
That's true.
I just keep going back to the cheaters comment. I think Hubs is a quiet big cheaters fan. He watches that on whatever.
What's the name of the host of that show?
I have no idea.
He's going to be waiting in the other room.
Hubs could have never done the surveillance thing. He got pinpointed and spotted out there at the airport that time waiting on Gruden to come in. So he could have never done the surveillance.
Hey, John Curry didn't catch me in the parking garage when he fired Butch Jones.
Peyton Manning saying. Caught you in that Toyota Tacoma.
Yeah, yeah.
Circle Park or whatever that was.
All right.
You're lucky you're still here.
Last one. I'm a man underscore I'm 40 says, has the 24 offensive line class passed the class of 2023's offensive line already? Johnson struggled. Had a bad sack and a hold. Unfortunate news for Sham with the injury. Lang has been passed over.
Yes.
Excited about the 24s. A lot of potential 25s. I would say yes. 24s is past 23s, right?
Yes. The answer is yes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Appreciate you guys for sending in those questions. I know we didn't get to all of them, and I do apologize, but time permitting. And we want to look around the SEC so far. No doubt about it. I know Michigan is taking on USC. There's some national games as well, but nationally it's Tennessee OU. It's the biggest game of the week, and it's the biggest game in the SEC. When you look at other games in the SEC this weekend, guys, not a whole lot there. Arkansas-Auburn's very enticing. Florida and Mississippi State's enticing just in terms of a dumpster fire. I think a lot of people are going to be intrigued to watch that. If Florida loses, 100% Napier's gone. But Mississippi State's a really bad football team right now. I don't see Florida losing on the road.
That's the ambulance chaser game is what that is. That's for everybody chasing an ambulance to see what's going to happen. But go ahead, AP.
No, I mean, I agree. I mean, I just don't think Florida can look. Mississippi State lost to Toledo. Like, they just roll out there and just run student body right and left with Lagway and then win that football, barring some kind of crazy flip around. But it is sports. So I guess you just never know. But I just don't see it. And then Arkansas and Auburn. The question is, can Auburn drag Arkansas down into the mud? Because if this game turns into a shootout, I'm going to take Arkansas because Arkansas can score, and I'm not sure Auburn has enough good quarterback play to score with Arkansas.
Is that Auburn or at Arkansas?
Auburn. At Auburn.
I like Auburn, even though Cal went into Auburn and won that. I don't know what to make of Arkansas. I don't know how good Oklahoma State is. To go to Oklahoma State and put up that lead they did early in that game, obviously they – crap the bed after that, but and then to come home and to struggle with UAB and to get down 17-3, that's a hard team to figure out right now.
Well, and they play Auburn, and then they play Texas A&M before Tennessee rolls into Fayetteville. So, I mean, they could be a three-loss team before Tennessee ever gets there. And then where are they at mentally at that point?
Well, I think you wonder about their mentality because they almost let Oklahoma State beat them twice. Because they were dealing with a serious we blew a game hangover against UAB a week ago. I think Arkansas can make a play or two and that's enough to win at Auburn. But here's the other thing: if it's a close game late, Arkansas did nothing in that Oklahoma State to tell you they can manage a game down the stretch.
Yep.
They just about butchered that thing completely. So. I don't know in a tight ball game in the fourth quarter. I don't know who I like in that game. I don't know if Auburn can make enough quarterback plays, but I don't know if Arkansas can manage the game well enough to get to the finish line either. So I tend to lean Arkansas here, but man, they just don't instill a whole lot of confidence in you with what you've seen out of them the last 2 weeks, trying to close a game out. And then mentally not being tough enough to put the loss to Oklahoma State behind them.
I think you could say the same thing about Auburn, though, in terms of closing, because they had a million opportunities against Cal and the kid threw 17 interceptions. And they've made a quarterback change since then, I guess.
And he looked great against a really bad football team. Right.
You know, this one is you would take Auburn because they're at home, or I would, and you take Arkansas if it was at Arkansas. I don't know how good either of these teams are.
I'm with AP. I'll take Arkansas because I think Arkansas can score. And talking about those.
I don't know who I'm taking. I'm just saying, like, if it turns out to be a shootout, I don't think Auburn can win. Auburn's got to drag them down in there and win it 20-17.
Yeah, I wouldn't put money on this game.
Similar to how I think Oklahoma's got to drag Tennessee down and win it. If Tennessee scores more than 24, I think Oklahoma has a really tough time winning that football game.
Here's the thing about Auburn, too, or Arkansas, too. Is there a book on the green kid now at quarterback? Right? It was a splash to start the game against Oklahoma State, and everybody's like, man, this guy's the real deal. It wasn't very good last week. He struggled a lot. Grant, is there a book on how to play him that Arkansas has to counter to now that everybody's seen him in that system for a couple of games? I think that's an interesting sideline to that matchup as well.
Yeah, it's got to be a factor, and I don't have a ton of faith in that Arkansas staff to counter and to come up with something to make him still be productive and somebody that can win football games, because we just haven't seen a ton from that staff to make you believe they got a lot of counters in them.
Yeah, Jaquindon Jackson's also going to be the best football player on the field that day. So does Vanderbilt make any type of noise against Missouri?
No.
I don't think so.
Where's it at? It doesn't matter where it's at because it's Vanderbilt.
Now, Missouri's offense has not gotten completely on track yet. They've not gotten going. But I don't think they have any trouble against – I don't think they have troubles against Vanderbilt. So, I like Missouri.
If you can't make noise at the artist formerly known as Turner Field, you can't make noise probably against Missouri.
Outside of that, there's not really any games that are intriguing on the SEC slate this week. I mean, it's
You don't like that UCLA LSU matchup in Baton Rouge, where it's going to be 93 with a 70% chance of humidity, and a UCLA team that could not hold off the mighty Indiana Hoosiers in the Rose Bowl last week. You don't think they're
really and really it's the James Madison Hoosiers, because Cignetti brought all his best players from JMU to Indiana and took them to the Rose Bowl and won 42-13 or whatever it was.
Wait, all the Indiana people go, hey, this is what the Rose Bowl looks like.
This is what the Big Ten's like. Nice.
That's right. This is what the granddaddy of them all is supposed to be. Okay. I've never been here before.
Any truth to the rumor that Farmer Fran's going to show up to talk to UCLA's head coach, since they sounded about the same at Big Ten Media Days?
Well, I don't know about Farmer Fran, but you're going to be able to buy some antiques outside the Rose Bowl on Friday at the flea market before you get ready for kickoff if you've got a game there.
Outside of the SEC, I think the Friday night game in the Big Ten is going to be solid. Nebraska hosting Illinois. I think Clemson will absolutely destroy NC State, but once upon a time, that was a game that people were looking forward to. And then again, I don't think Michigan and USC is going to be much of a game. USC's first game in the Big Ten, I think they run all over Michigan, because I don't think Michigan is – they are starting a new quarterback, but I don't think Michigan is who they certainly weren't last year. That'll do it for this edition of the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. Tennessee, of course, has a monster game at Oklahoma. First game in SEC play for the Volunteers. First game ever in the Southeastern Conference for the Sooners. A lot of storylines going into this one, and we got you covered all that and more over at VolQuest.com. Join us 50% off annual memberships right now. If we put in the promo code GOVOLS at checkout, that's promo code GOVOLS for 50% off annual memberships over at VolQuest.com right now up until kickoff. Big thanks, as always, to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of this show. For Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, Grant Ramey, I am Eric Kane. Thank you guys so much for sending in your questions here on the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.